Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I am in the bubble. He is not. He is far better off than I am right now, to be honest with you. Oh, and I'm going to do the banter today because I'm going to. Here's a public service announcement for the kids out there. The secret to not being depressed is to concentrate less on yourself. That is a secret to I got stuck in one of those cycles where I was comparing I'll give you an example, Chris. I started doing stand up in 1991 in high school. The person who has made it the furthest in stand up from my high school was a year ahead of me. And I had never heard of any other stand-ups from Newport News, Virginia, in terms of just that area. But her name's Coco Brown. She has a recurring part on 911, the TV show out here. I go, okay, fine. I can live with that. You know, that won't be my legacy. Well, and then I get to college. Of course, Tina Fey was a couple years ahead of me. But also in a few of my drama classes was a kid by the name of Jake West, who got new faces for the Just for Laughs in Montreal. Stand-up festival, big comedy festival. He actually did a show I booked once, which is interesting. I wasn't there that night. Like, okay, fine. Best TV writer for my class at UVA, guy by the name of Carter Covington, who was in some of my government classes, who got it by just, I don't know what I want to do with my life. He moved out to LA, started dating a producer, and was a producer for the show Greek. And and was the creator of the TV version of 10 Things I Hate About You. Okay, so I don't get that. So it's just one of those weird things where it's just like, you know, everything you tried, you had somebody who just came along later and did better than you did. And you're just like, okay. So that's my cue for kids. I really don't have a point to this, Chris. I just need to get some therapy out. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I'm 37.
Are you the biggest guitar player out of your high school? In terms of the time you went there?
I guess.
Or a musician or something?
I guess. I just haven't kept up with any of them.
Okay, so yeah. you just knocked about the door.
Once I left,
yeah.
I do tend to be pretty good about closing the doors on things.
Yeah, I left Newport News. And that was the follow up slash icing on the cake on this. In terms of wrestling podcasting, I'm not the most well known wrestling podcaster from my high school. That is Nate Milton of Post Wrestling.
Oh yeah, Nate.
Who also went to Mitchville High School in Newport News, Virginia. And I'm just like, damn, even for my hobbies, for my niche interests, I'm not the most well-known of that either. So I'm just like, yeah, I love Newport News thinking my goal was to actually get a feature story in the local paper about how well I'd done after I left my town. That ain't ever gonna happen unless I like hit the lottery or something. So it's like, whatever. Oh. But kind of, I had some time to get in that headspace, and then that's why you have to keep busy enough not to get in the headspace, kids. Whatever. Anyways, how's your week, Chris?
I'm 37 and I'm trying to record my first like legitimate collection of songs that I play on and sing and stuff. So yeah, probably a little late to be the big rock star or whatever, but I'm enjoying making music.
As long as you enjoy it, that's the other thing. Is I stop enjoying comedy in so many ways. It's just like because everything outside of the time on stage was such a pain in the ass. Yeah, whatever. Instead of us bitching about life, let's talk about wrestling, which I'm sure will all be nothing but sunshine and rainbows about. WWE announced on November 7th that NXT would be moving to the CW network in October 2024 after the current contract with USA Network expires. TKO earnings call after the deal was announced, it was said to be a 70% increase in rights fees, which were believed by those in the company and analysts to be between $20 million and $25 million per year, meaning the new deal would also fall between $34 and $42.5 million. The increase will also allow NXT to be more profitable as a standalone brand. Well, Jeff, didn't you just report last week on Billy Corgan's NWA possibly having a deal for two shows? Well, it also been rumored to be the home of Billy Corgan's NWA, both a wrestling show and a reality show. It will be interesting to note if that has changed, because in the past, WWE has insisted on exclusivity when it comes to pro wrestling on any station they appear on. For anybody who wasn't paying attention, on the NWA pay-per-view, apparently they did a sketch where Jim Mitchell, the Sinister Minister, was doing cocaine, I put that in quotation marks, and sharing it with people around the table, which might have turned off the network to doing a deal and start negotiating with WWE. To quote Chris Rock, grand opening, grand closing. But the CW was also in talks with UWN and Dave Marquez to do a live weekly show out of LA, but the WWE getting a nod. One would think the other deals as far as CW television long-term could be dead. Interesting to know at least two other promotions that talked with the CW. Nick Houseman also reports that Tony Khan was approached by a CW executive in June 2022 at the show at the Forum and showed interest in airing Ring of Honor on CW, which would have been an all-around positive for both sides. At the time, Khan was not interested because he felt it wasn't fair to his relationship with WBD to make an outside deal. You sentimental son of a... It's not clear if Khan legally couldn't do it at the time or he just didn't want to do anything that would upset WBD by selling a show to a competitor. He was unable to make a television deal for ROH with any of the WBD stations at the time, and now one would think CW is off the boards as a destination. Chris, initial thoughts on NXT moving away from USA to the C-Dub?
Is C-Dub on, like, antenna TV?
Yes.
I don't even have a good frame of reference on this. That might actually be good for NXT then. Not maybe, like, in terms of ratings, but in terms of, like, getting the product into houses that might be likely to go and check out a WWE show. But I find all these TV show, like these TV network deals to be weird, because like I just, as someone, I have not had a cable TV package in 20 plus years now. And I just assume that more and more people are kind of moving in that direction.
Yeah, I'm not as high on this as a lot of other people are. I get that it's going to be exposure and it'll probably remain on Tuesday nights. My problem is this. This is a very much a lot like when SmackDown went to, was it MyTV or whatever it was? CW right now is in the midst of a real identity crisis. They used to be where all the teen shows would be, like the what was that? Dawson's Creek.
Oh God, that was a long time ago.
Yeah,
that was a long time ago.
No, I'm giving yeah. a basic history.
That was like the WB, yeah.
Yeah, that was the WB, and they became the CW for the most part. They sold their networks, and then they were really for a number of years, almost a decade. They were the place for DC Comics television shows to be, the Arrowverse, as it were, Arrow and The Flash and Supergirl and the short-lived Black Lightning and Legends of Tomorrow. And so they were very heavily into the geek culture. And then, like, of late, they've kind of been into the dark reboot type of business. I think Supernatural was on the CW for a while. The reboot of that Witches show that used to, Charmed. And also the weird, dark take on Riverdale, where like Archie, Jughead, Veronica, and Betty have like a four-way mutual coupling thing. It's basically, you know, teen drama meets Archie meets sex type of a show. But they have some weird deals now going. Like they show ACC football. Now, look, I am from the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference. We are not a football powerhouse by any means. We have a few good teams. We have, you know, your Clemsons and your Florida States and Miamis. But it's also like Duke and North Carolina and Virginia. And soon Stanford and California, those Atlantic Coast schools that are there. So they've been trying to kind of reform themselves as, I think, general network, not unlike what Fox did when they really overpaid for the NFL package to come from CBS to them, in addition to some of their fringe programming at the time, because it was like this, it was The Simpsons, and then it was shows like Married with Children, which wasn't highly regarded. It was watched, but it wasn't highly regarded. So I don't know. I don't. The CW network is such a It's such a hodgepodge of channels and stuff like that. It doesn't have like network news on it or anything like that. It's not a major, it's the equivalent of what a UHF channel used to be for people with antennas and stuff. I also just don't think NXT is a strong enough product to
be a destination show right now.
To be a destination show or to get away. It's what's called a hammock show, really. If you think about it, because it's there to basically bleed off anybody who was watching Raw the previous night in many ways. People know what channel it's on. It's on at the same time and people can go there. A hammock show in network TV parlance is like the sitcom you put at 8:30 between the powerhouses you have at 8 and 9. So say, you know, we're going to put, you know, they'll usually do it with new shows. It's like, okay, we have the Cosby Show at 8 and we have Cheers at 9. You know, let's put, you know, Family Ties was already kind of a minor hit, but I was thinking like A Different World when it launched, or, you know, something that's not a 30-year-old reference.
Step by step
was, wasn't that the 9 o'clock powerhouse on the TGI Friday network?
Yeah.
No, but it'd be Dinosaurs would be a good example, because I think Dinosaurs was at 8:30 between Family Matters and Step by Step. If I'm wrong about that, people can correct me. I don't care. I like Dinosaurs. But yeah, I just, it's one of those things, and it's not. NXT's ratings of late have been high because of the main roster people on there. And if they continue to cycle people on there as current guest stars, I assume that'd be a good thing. But overall, the wrestling is far more mid. The stories are a little bit too campy. I don't know. I mean, because like something like Women of Wrestling could be a hit on the CW, and we'd never see it coming because it's, you know, it's schlocky TV that, you know, just becomes something that people watch when they're flipping the channels one of these days, and it's not cable. So you have access to more houses. I think overall it's a net positive. It's just one of those things where I'm just like, I don't think it'll be a huge hit, but, you know, it might have enough to sustain itself kind of like a Tesla coil.
Back in the day, like, Lucha Underground would be a good fit on CW.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would have had a creative enough hook where non-wrestling fans might tune in and watch it.
Yep.
Because it was big on the telenovela stuff.
Before it got weird in the later seasons, but like those first few seasons had like a really nice balance of like,
yeah,
just enough plotty stuff, and then still basically a wrestling show.
And NXT, look, it does builds well, but I wouldn't call the sketches that they do good. You know, they're schlocky, but they're not even ironic schlocky for the most part. They're very pro wrestling. It's very much what you say. Okay, if WWE had a show and they were trying to do a developmental territory, what would you think the sketches on WWE type of a show would be? And okay, heavy gimmick, bad comedy, those types of things. So I'm
overstaged, like closing segment on NXT with Mello. Yeah. Lexus King.
Yeah, it's very, you know,
a Lexus King.
It doesn't pass the "Are you embarrassed if a family member walks into the room?" test. And I think Lucha Underground might have.
Oh yeah, some of those Dario Cueto scenes, I wouldn't have had any problem people coming in and seeing, you know, like Dario Cueto talking to
Matanza.
Not Matanza. Matanza didn't really land for me. That was one that
I have a brother and I've kept him in a dungeon.
I was not a huge fan of Matanza. I think that like really for me, it's those first two seasons of Lucha Underground where, you know, it's really good. And then the third season, they kind of like get a little bit off the rails. They had the whole bizarre sexy star storyline.
Yes.
Horrible.
Penta likes to break arms.
Yeah, but that was good. The Penta breaking arms thing was good.
Got a little bit complicated when you had the Angela Fong / Lotus, the triad thing. It's like EO and Kyrie. He's breaking women's arms now, and you're like, I don't know.
I mean, you know, like they came in as hired assassins, Jeff.
That's true. If you're a female assassin, you got to beat on them.
Yeah, I mean, what about, okay, like, if female ninjas break into my house, what am I supposed to do?
You have to eschew the male-female chivalry stuff if assassin comes after you.
These are hired assassins.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, you've convinced me.
Yeah.
TKO had his quarterly earnings call. Earnings calls are going to be much, much different with the WWE. Because they don't mention any of the business metrics that Vince McMahon and everybody else used to go. It's a clean number. It's like, here's the profit, and here's what we were expecting, and that's it. There's no breakdown. There's no numbers. Those are all in the filings, but they're not going to do this on the call like Vince had to. It's mostly because they also have the UFC business to take care of. It's like, here's our deals. Here's our business. That's it. And I'm fascinating because like WWE was only 12 days in, you know, to the official merger, or the quarter only covered 12 days, but there's already rumblings when TKO or when Zuffa, when, you know, Fertitta took over the UFC, it became, you know, less about people we like and what's the bottom line. And so they cut a lot of veterans at that time, and I'm assuming that bloodletting's coming, and it might be a Christmas present to a lot of people, unfortunately, because Vince and company have been known to do that before, even before the merger. But now you have, you know, now you have the bookkeepers involved and stuff. So I'm fascinated by that. It was a fascinating call because it was much more, WWE is far less a part of the call than you'd think it would be for an equal partner. It's just kind of like, here's the financials, boom.
Why do you, I mean, so, and then the rest of the time it's just been UFC.
Yeah, so, I mean, they give the everything, UFC. And you know, there's no here's our goals for the year, here's our stuff. It's more of a corporate presentation than you'd think it was, for an entertainment company? Because you think the entertainment company would be concentrating a lot on, you know, here's what we're looking at or whatever. And they're just like, now we're putting on shows. That's it. Boom. Talk to you later.
They might be holding the line here for a couple of quarters until Vince is like more
out of the picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of which, company's largest shareholder, Vince McMahon, then announced 2 days later that he intends to offer to sell 8.4 million shares of his stock. Notable, he's doing this because analysts feel right now the stock is undervalued. It is. It's not even $100. And one would think he'd wait until it's valued higher if that's the case, although stock wouldn't all be sold at once. Chris, why would you sell 8.4 million shares of stock at an all-time low? Or not an all-time low. It's $79, I think, even though WWE stock was over 100 at the time. Golly, Chris, there be any reason that Vince McMahon might need some spending cash?
Well, you see, Jeff, when a man likes a woman.
Ooh.
But that woman doesn't like that man, but that man continues to press in advance upon that woman. In such a situation, that man often finds himself in court.
Is there a picture book about this that I could read?
Yeah. It's when a man likes a woman, in parentheses, but she doesn't like him and wishes he would stop.
Babar goes to court. Wait.
Yeah. The Berenstain Bears. It's the one where Papa Bear gets in trouble at work. And it shames the whole family.
Curious George gets a little too curious. The cat in the hat with a restraining order. Yes.
The man in the yellow hat gets in trouble at the cafe.
Yes. Well, in my moonlighting job, the Screen Actors Guild strike is now over for all intents and purposes. The voting on the contract is probably going to be nothing more than a formality, but John Cena remains. He now gets to go back to work and make Peacemaker Volume 2. But that doesn't mean he can't also be a victim of some penny-pinching stuff by one David Zasloff. Coyote versus Acme, a live-action and animation movie, much like Batwoman. Not that that's an animated movie, but much like the Project Batwoman, canceled by the WBD, expected to be shelved for the tax loss. And boy, this sounded like an interesting movie to me, Chris. John Cena would be playing the lead attorney for the Acme Corporation, from which Wile E. Coyote buys all of his products, and Wile E. Coyote files suit against Acme to sue them for their ineffectiveness.
It sounds more like a sketch than an actual full movie.
I don't know, though. I'd be John Cena playing this straight. I'm here for that, man, because he does that kind of goofy comedy stuff. That sounds like a winner to me in terms of actually having like adult humor within the movie as well. As stuff for the kids.
Sounds like a 7-minute sketch to me rather than
you're actually kind of right now that I think about
it. Yeah, it's a 7-minute sketch.
Although the screenplay was also rewritten by James Gunn. So they had some big time people on that. Of just random interest, Bill Mercer of world class championship wrestling fame appears in the new National Geographic documentary JFK One Day in America, which is also streaming on Disney Plus and the Hulu. It's a Tony Kornheiser joke. Calls it the Hulu. Mercer worked in radio news in Dallas, and his biggest claim to fame was his coverage of the Kennedy assassination in Dallas, which I did not know. He actually told Lee Harvey Oswald that he was being charged with the murder at the time. Chris, is this enough to make you watch the JFK documentary?
Yeah, what happens to Lee Harvey Oswald?
Oh, you know, Jack Ruby, paid by the CIA, shoots him.
Oh.
Allegedly.
Spoilers, dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am of the opinion. Well, okay, here we go. What's your belief on the Kennedy assassination? Did he act alone?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think he did.
Okay.
Saray, I'm reading this story. It's like Saray, the former Saray, but no, Saray, the former Saray, as it's spelled, in NXT, assigned a multi-year deal with Sukubon. I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's an American-based Japanese wrestling company. She'll debut on the company's second show in December in Miami in a four-way match, pitting wrestlers of four different stables. Saray will be part of the Cherry Bomb Girls and face Countess Sayori, Atomic Banshee, and Babyface in a four-way match. Fightful has reported Saray in talks to return to WWE, as I said last week, although those in WWE denied to us, saying that the departure wasn't really all that smooth, and that while the name came up, it wasn't anything serious. We heard that Saray was in talks with Stardom, and obviously signing here wouldn't rule out any Stardom appearances since several people work both groups. Yes, there's a Japanese company that is now putting a Japanese women's promotion here in the States. Small, I assume that they will be working on syndicated television of some sort, and Saray looks to be the foundation of that. Chris, any thoughts?
She's solid.
She is. She got done dirty by WWE, and I think Triple H wanted to bring her back to do a make good, but dude, if you waste 3 years of your life and they don't use you. I can see her being bitter and saying, no, I'm not coming back to that. Are you crazy?
They really did waste 3 years of her career. And like during that time, too, they wasted a lot of people's time.
They're still wasting Tyler Bates' time. I'm still wondering what they're doing. Oh, yeah.
And Pete Dunne, too. Butch.
Let's bookmark that for Lazy River Talk, shall we?
Okay.
Injury report. Ricochet and Fallon Henley, both in concussion protocol. Not because they were in a match together. Ricochet, as you saw in if you watched Raw in that four-way, looks like he got that pretty early and ended up messing up the ending of the match, which was he was not supposed to kick out of the moonsault from whichever Viking Raider it is, because I always get I think it's Ivar, not Eric.
Yeah, it's Ivar. Eric's out on the
That's what I thought. Right, and then Fallon Henley on was it the prettiest moonsault ever? Or
Stratton definitely got her face pretty.
Got her in the head. Yeah. So those are all we have to report. Ratings, just to talk about them. AEW did 804,000 viewers with a 0.28 in 18 to 49, and 0.20 with 18 to 34. Coming off Crown Jewel and with lesser competition, Raw on Monday did its best audience since the show on October 9th. Show at the Fast Lane. Raw did 1.5 million, a little bit over that, with 0.47 in the 18 to 49. NXT placed first on cable on Tuesday with the NBA off due to election night. NXT beat all election night coverage and was the highest rated episode of the show since 2019, other than the show where they had Undertaker, John Cena, Cody Rhodes, Paul Heyman et al. Show did 794,000 viewers with a 0.26 in the demo. Collision, on the other hand, got crushed because nobody wanted to watch wrestling after watching Crown Jewel. They did 366,000 viewers with a 0.09, 116,000 viewers in 18 to 49. Rampage, lowest viewership since June 9th, although up slightly from last week, 298,000 viewers with a 0.11. That means that Collision and Rampage almost tied. SmackDown, back to its regular time slot with the tape show, did 2.1 million viewers, 0.53 in 18 to 49. Any thoughts on any of those?
How Dynamite do?
Dynamite did 804,000.
It's not bad.
I believe it was fifth for the week, because I think there was like a real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I mean,
they're
holding steady, at least.
They're holding steady. I mean, it's... Yeah. And they have a good plan with MJF being all over that show.
That part for sure. The satellite shows really, it appears they just struggle to find an audience. Even among the AEW faithful, they struggle to find like an audience.
They are there to exist. And yeah. I mean, my idea was give them a hook, give them a log line, make them special or weird or different or something outside of the box. Experiment, I think, in some ways.
At this point, when you're doing 300,000 and below, why not turn these into just test labs for weird shit?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know. do have a completely alt, like a bizarro universe show. I mean, how can you do worse?
That does it for our news section now for the Lazy River of professional wrestling. Whatever we watched, whatever's on our mind from stuff this week can come up. And I am going to take this opportunity to fire the first shot because I'd like to talk to some of you people who insult me. And by that, I mean,
get him, Jeff.
I mean, the people who come after me, and there are people in the Voices of Wrestling community who do this too. And there are people online who do this, who say,
what do they say about you?
Oh, you old heads, meaning me. There's no such thing as a casual wrestling fan. You don't need to book for casuals. You don't need to book for people because everybody kind of knows who everybody is and everybody follows the news. And we know that because Chris doesn't follow the news. So, but what am I talking about in context? I'm talking about this debut of Mariah May on AEW Dynamite. Now, for people who don't know, such as Chris, Mariah May was over there in Stardom doing stuff, getting high praise from people who I listen to in the bubble.
Cool.
I was told, Mariah May could be a big star in AEW. Mariah May would be a great get for either WWE or AEW. Mariah May could be a business changer, I believe Dave Meltzer said. I don't know if that for a fact. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But basically, him and other podcasts, especially Stardom and Joshi ones, were just like, what a big deal this Mariah May is. And I think Mariah May is very, very talented. I think she's very good on the acting side as well. And how did we introduce her? With RJ City, a comedy sketch, an All About Eve angle, or depending on how derivative you want to be, Mickey James and Trish Stratus / Tori and Sable, if you will. This does not scream star treatment. This does not scream making it a big deal. And all I want, guys, when I get into old head territory, is I want wrestlers, especially in their debut, to seem like a big deal. Mariah May, to me, should have been somebody with vignettes or something to that effect, hyping her first appearance in AEW, which then I would have liked a squash match, of course, for, to then introduce her to the entire world and show what a badass and bigger deal thing. Because I think I am of the opinion that a lot of what wrestling is missing is the awe of star power that the alternate reality of wrestling on television used to give to you. You used to think that wrestling was a big money business where people would go and all the people in there were making millions and millions of dollars, even if it wasn't true. That's all I want, because that actually made people seem bigger than life. And instead, I think the goal is to make wrestlers relatable or funny or whatever. I'm just like, they can come out naturally, but make them a big deal first. I'll give the second half of my rant after I let Chris have a chance here to give some thoughts on the debut of Mariah May.
I looked at her and I hadn't heard anything about the Stardom stuff or anything like that. I'm not familiar with their work over there. She just immediately reminded me of Toni Storm. And then she name checked Toni Storm. And I'm like, oh, okay.
The Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other.
I see it very much in the face and like the Australian accent, them both having it helps, but like it's so there in the face that you would see that immediately. They had the different hair, and I have no intrigue in two people who are alike having a feud because they're too alike. Like that's a weird thing to do.
Oh, but it'll get laughs, Chris. When she's doing all the man, she's gonna basically, I think, be Sandow to the Miz. Maybe not doing the stunt double thing, but you know, we're gonna play up this black and white movie thing for a long time. We're gonna have two, you know, All About Eve's a great movie. Don't get me wrong. It's just Here's my issue as well. And it goes into the
I mean, the Tony Storm gimmick is also goofy, too. And
yeah,
like,
and I don't think it should be anywhere near the title, but it looks like it's going to get it, so.
No, and then, like, I just think, I mean, I don't, I'm ambivalent to it being near the title as just, like, it's like a, you know, it's like a Goldust having the Intercontinental Championship
yes.
thing. Like, I see, I like Goldust as Intercontinental Champion, so. I don't know.
I'm ambivalent too. I mean, it'll be entertaining, but it's one of those things where.
But it's still, it's not a way to debut someone who's supposed to be a big star.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I mean, that's a, like my face when you're reading those like Meltzer quotes. I'm like, really?
Oh,
like,
oh, I wasn't reading Meltzer quotes. I was trying to think
the
of
game
them
changer. Before. Yeah. The game changer or whatever.
I might have oversold it, but I remember when it was like Mariah May debut at All Out or All In. It's like, oh, that would be huge in the front of the British audience and blah, blah, blah. It's
I
like,
just don't know that anything's going to change the game for AEW at this point. I think the game is the game. Like, their game is 800 to a million.
No, I agree with that. But I think in general, and I'm gonna now fold it into the larger world because I read a lot of people, and there's a lot of especially female columnists and podcasters who are very frustrated with women's wrestling right now, especially in AEW, because, you know, you only get one women's match really per show, if that. And the talk is always like, to me, I always,
yeah, but
I always,
what do you want to see? Do you want to see more Sky Blue?
No, I really don't.
No, that's my, like, I mean, when they, I'm never left for wanting more. I get the general sense of these people who you read and listen to that I'm not aware of and do not read nor listen to. But I never leave AEW's women's section of the show going, man, they should have one more segment of this. They're doing such a good job with these. These are all so good that I want to watch more of this.
It all feels.
And I never feel that way.
Yeah, it also feels that their instincts are all very WWE adjacent, shall we say, or TNA, even TNA adjacent in some ways in terms of what they do with weird, wacky characters like Sue Young at times, the former Sue Young who was there.
Yeah,
I mean,
Sheeta's a very capable wrestler, but a boring champion.
Yes. We've presented all these women the wrong way, and I have said this a million times, and people are now going to say, here comes Jeff with his stale idea. Okay, fine. But if I dressed up three women in power suits with sunglasses and money and gave all three of them belts, and it said they were here to do wrestling, to make a lot of money, be rich, and hurt people. Like a certain faction that might have come from the 80s that you should not reference because then become derivative. That stable would be the biggest thing in professional wrestling in terms of women's professional wrestling. If we took more notes from the 80s and how they did characters and promos and stuff, instead of doing comedy skits and lore and sketches and drama and stuff like that, and just had them come out and talk. And then we group them in regular stables. Like, the mistake that I think people make is that when this happens, they go, well, it's because Tony doesn't know women. So we need a female writer to go in there and do that. And I always go, no, you just need good writers or good people and to book women's wrestlers more like wrestlers than like women. And that has always been my dead horse that I beat to death on glue, is that everybody's worried more about the women part of women's wrestling more than the wrestling part, where one would take care of the other to me in many ways. If you had a Dusty Rhodes, Rick, I mean, when was the last time we really had a good Ric Flair type character in the women's division at any time? I know Tessa, I think, tried in Impact at one time or whatever, you know, but most of it's, you know, geared toward like the Charlotte Flair Peacock crap. And it's like, no, what, it was just a serious professional wrestler who was in it for the money, who had class and style, and just was in this match also because she was the best, but also kind of enjoyed hurting people. What would we get out of that? Why do we not have Nyla Rose, the centerpiece of a stable, where she is. Okay, here's my point. Wrestling is an alternate reality, and you set the rules for the alternate reality and you build them. Nyla Rose is the native beast. It's not just a nickname. She is the native beast. She should be acting like this when she is around. She should be tearing into people's locker rooms and beating them up or something to that effect. You know, she should have a manager that can barely keep control of her. Things of that nature. Play the realities of the characters that you're given these people for the most part, as opposed to the goofy, what would be funny or pop an audience type of thing. And it's one of those things where it's like, this is where the old heads, I would hire the hell out of them to then book the women's division. I really would. I mean, the best women's producer right now going is Finley, apparently, and he still gets what makes women's wrestling special.
Yeah. It's hard with like AEW's women's division, just because so many of these pieces are the same pieces that they've done. I mean, for good and for ill, WWE has a deep enough roster and also enough rotation due to injury and stuff and just people kind of coming in and out. There is like, there has been some degree of like ebb and flow to the roster. Whereas I feel like I have been seeing the same 8 to 10 people on the show.
Oh, I'd say 4 people.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
Chris, Willow, Sky Blue,
and
Julia Hart.
Cheetah, yeah.
Maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna
Ruby.
Ruby, right. I'm gonna spot them up to 8.
Yeah.
But like all of these people, narratively, there's not a lot of tread on any of the tires, in part because there's no intrigue for any of the matches, because they've now basically had all the matches you can have and pretty much all the configurations that are interesting.
Yeah, and then we make stables and they're automatically bickering with each other, like the Outcasts or the Baddies. And the Baddies was a good idea, but it was just like, and then it just all became about the internal drama of your crew. And it's like, well, we haven't really established them as a crew that has a great ethos. I mean, the Outcast was good because it's just like, hey, we used to be in WWE and it was better there. The Baddies had an interesting thing, except that they were all red shirts and geeks, except for Jade. You know, we really haven't done a lot with this women's division other than, you know, hey, Chris Statler's friendly and people like her a lot. You know, it's like, okay, great. How does that fit in? You know, Willow has a great theme song. Okay, great. People like her. I mean, we've ruined Willow in some ways because she was the one to put over Jade, or to get put over Jade, in my opinion, and to make her a star. Now we're just treading water with her. And instead now we're doing, what does Blue Mist mean? What does Black Mist mean? Who's on whose side? It's lore stuff. And you're just like, okay, great. That's great for mid-card stuff. Let's get to the top of the card and see some people who want to actually have feuds. That's just my opinion. Your go, Chris. I've talked enough.
No, I mean, I really do feel you on the ennui with AEW's women's division. I don't know who the young up-and-comer, I guess Mariah May would be the person, but like once she gets through the match with, She'll get a good Sheeta match, get a good Ruby match, maybe get a good Emi Sakura match in there. That's 3 weeks of television.
Your two champions of the division don't cut promos.
Tony's good. Yeah, right.
Tony's not a champ, though. I mean, I'm talking to her and Statlander.
Yeah, and Statlander. Okay, so like that's like 5 good matches. None of which would necessarily be that good matches doesn't necessarily mean good programs, to be clear. Cause as you just said, she doesn't cut a promo like that. Is not going to tell a story like that. I love Emi Sakura, but like, you know, Emi Sakura is a really good character worker. Not really like a storyteller person. Who else?
I am here though for Sakura and Nyla as a crew.
I mean, like, yeah, okay, like, that's fun. That's fun. They can have several good matches. It's just nothing. The roster's not. It's not.
You know what? The characters aren't diverse enough to have a world, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And they also don't click very well. Like, no. they're different from one another, like, I guess, but also they're not, it's not like, it's a Styles Makes Fights thing, right? But like, I don't really care about like Emmy Sakura or per se having a feud with, like, I don't know, Chris Statlander.
Yeah, and there's no,
and this is not a knock on Emi Sakura.
No. There's no
why would I care?
There's no emotional resonance between any of the women in AEW. Like, you don't really know. I mean, they tell you, oh, she's her friend, but they don't really act like friends to one another. That nobody, you know, Emi and Hikaru have a rivalry because Emi was her trainer or whatever. Yeah, like, that's great. That's a backstory. But how does Emi feel about Hikaru Shida? Let's hear that in a promo.
We never
or
see
something.
That put on screen either. This is a violation of show not don't tell. Like, if you saw Emi Sakura occasionally out there watching Shida's matches, and like, you could just see that, like, the reason she was watching it was because this is someone who, you know, she trained, and like, she might be going for the title at some point, or she just might be watching her student. Like,
yes.
If you would actually establish that, then all of a sudden you could pay off that moment in the ring at some point when they actually have to square off for the, you know, auspices of a tournament or whatever. But like, just saying it all of a sudden, it's so weird. It's like, you know, like, let's say Kenny Omega had a match against, I don't know, like,
Vikingo?
Yeah, Vikingo. And it's revealed that Vikingo stabbed his uncle 2 years ago at a bar, right? at the beginning of the
match. It's got dark quick. Oh, yeah. But we're just gonna...
on Excalibur's on the mic, and he's talking about, like, Kenny's uncle lost one of his kidneys because of this. Vikingo's a bad man, but we've never...
And you know what they'd do? They'd have a match with a lot of choreography, and Excalibur would try and go, oh, you can see the hatred in Kenny's moves, and Kenny would just be doing the same match he does against, you know, any other acrobatic wrestler or whatever, as opposed to, you know, actually, you know, laying it in and being angry at Vikingo for stabbing his uncle. It would just be a plot point to get to the match. You know what it'd be? It'd be every Hangman feud ever, because Swerve goes into the kid's house and cuts a promo on his kid, and Hangman finally decides 3 weeks later, oh, I'm angry at this now. Now I gotta get at you.
That is still a step up because they at least showed something. But like, in my head, it's very much Kenny Omega hitting the one-winged angel on Vikingo and getting the pin, and Excalibur going, that was for his uncle. He may never get the kidney back, but today Kenny Omega got the win back for his
uncle. That was for his uncle.
That was for his uncle.
Yes.
No, the Hangman Swerve thing, like, I mean, what is the point of letting something wait for 3 weeks? In the real world, if something like this happened, you would, like, want to follow up on this immediately the week later. So it's either AEW World is trapped in amber in the intervening weeks between the show, like, time at once moves in terms of injury recovery, but also does not actually move for any of these characters. Like,
yes.
Yeah. That they can only act and do things inside of the AEW
when world. The camera is on at the arena.
At the arena.
Yes. Your turn, sir.
Loving what they're doing with the Young Bucks here. just think this is going to be really interesting. Love it when Mac Jackson gets to carry the weight of drama.
I'm not gonna be too harsh on the Bucks part of that promo. I'm gonna be harsh on the Jericho part, because Jericho is being an absolute prick in that promo, and he's supposed to be a babyface after the JAS and after Don Callis turns on him and said he wanted him dead and tried to kill him. Jericho's out there just being an absolute douche canoe, knowing that these guys are friends. Kenny's not saying anything at the time, and he's not really all that embarrassed either by what's being said, to the point where he has to step in and defend it. I thought Jericho played this far too strong for a guy. I mean, as if it's like Kenny's my new best friend kind of a thing. And you're like, no. This is an uneasy alliance between the two of you, as was established 3 weeks ago. You're not the world's greatest tag team. You're not this, that, the other.
Well, I mean, they have a name, the Golden Jets, and you're forgetting something important. They're both from Canada, the same country. And that sort of overcomes any absolute lack of narrative cohesion at any point during the history of this company between these two.
But the point is to get over the Bucks' passive aggressiveness. And you know how you don't do that? By being more passive aggressive. Than the Bucks are. You need to just go, hey, look, we're just teaming for a while right now to get rid of Don Callis and his family. I'm not trying. He should literally say, I'm not trying to steal Kenny Omega from you. We're just a team right now. You know, we're a better team right now.
What if the Bucks are actually baby faces here? This is once again more the end of all this, that the Bucks are actually the baby face of this segment.
I didn't think of it that way, but yes, what if they're the actual heroes?
There's like a 20% chance that that's how this storyline ends.
That's like my favorite trolling thought piece was in the Washington Post. There's an editorial about how the Empire was actually right in the Star Wars movies, and the Rebellion was nothing but a bunch of religious zealots who are causing too much trouble in the universe type of a thing. It's like, yeah, oh God, no. I expect them to join with the Callis family eventually. But half of this promo, I'm thinking that back there going, Jericho is playing this so heelish. I almost expect him to join the Callis family after almost being killed by them at one point.
He had a painting of him getting killed by him, but clearly that was the intention.
It's like the AR Fox Darby thing. All's forgiven. The next week. Yeah, I did not enjoy that segment at all because I'm just watching this and going, nobody knows their role here.
Except the Bucks.
Bucks just need to be the Bucks. That's it. Because the Bucks are actually correct. You might be right. The Bucks might be the baby face here because they literally come out and go, hey, Kenny, I thought we were just going to be the elite for a while.
I mean, right? Like, they're in this case, yet they have a point this time, but they're the heels. They always find a really interesting way to characterize themselves, don't they? Where, like, they're the good guys, but they're wrong. Like, in the case of them with the Dark Order. And in this case, they're, like, the bad guys, but they're right in the case of Jericho.
It's like, no, they are dead set correct. Kenny, yeah. I thought this was going to be our thing for a while.
There's no narrative reason to be this closely aligned with Chris Jericho.
And what you need to do is tell them that they're correct still. Have Chris and Kenny go, yes, you guys are still the elite. I am just having this temporary teaming with Kenny Omega for right now to get rid of the Callis family. And then once I'm out, or once that's done, you guys can go on your merry way and be the great guys. Be a baby face about it. Just talk them up and just have the Bucks just not having any of it.
No, and make the Bucks heal. Ends the segment with, I have my own
locker room.
That pulls out the whole point of any of this then, right? Yes. Like, Jericho's like, I'm not really that close with Omega. I'm like, you know, his tag team partner right now. Like, we're a tag team. We're not like best friends. We're a tag team. Like, you know, we're working together.
And it's leaning into the Bucks punk mythos too. If you have a problem with me, come to my locker room.
Oh yeah. Oh well, yeah. That's, oh boy. Everyone's going to definitely understand and read into that. And I bet you, no. Let's give this a few weeks and you see if old Novi isn't telling the truth here. We're going to be up a good couple hundred thousand in the old ratings. Familiar with a little thing called the demo? Get ready to watch that puppy explode because people going into 2024, they care about this. They want to hear about it.
I'm going to give a little sorbet here and head over to the WWE before heading back to AEW.
How's sherbet?
Sorbet.
Sherbet.
It's a palate cleanser, sorbet.
Right. Yeah.
Lemon sorbet.
Sherbet.
We're a classy show, Chris. We don't call it sherbet.
Okay.
But those hillbillies in the South call it.
Okay. All right.
You know who had himself kind of a week was Akira Tozawa. And in short, also the Alpha Academy. Because number one, I think this partnership works. Number two, pretty good banger on Raw, pretty good banger against Noam Dar on NXT as well. just, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm glad they're giving the young guy a chance. It's like, dude, he's 35 and he's been in this company for 7 years. You can't say that about him, but it's nice that they're showing him off a little bit. Look, Otis had a good match on NXT as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that match with Gulak was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was a perfect squash type of a thing, although I don't know if you squashed the leader of a faction first. Kind of had to build that, but Otis, and they've been kind of killing the social media game in terms of doing short videos, getting all four of them over. They have this weird dance video that is oddly endearing me, especially because I'm not a big fan of the Maxine Dupri character. I don't see what she brings at all other than she's a semi-attractive blonde who's just attached to the Alpha Academy, which might be just enough. But I love me some Otis. Otis is so great. Just I often imagine that Otis is playing his character not unlike Chris Farley from the Chippendale sketch in Saturday Night Live, where he does think he's the sexiest man in the room. he thinks he's a beefcake, and he acts like it as part of the Alpha Academy in addition to playing the big guy. But no, these guys had great matches, and I enjoy, because I got to see work rate Akira Tozawa in PWG. He is such a fantastic wrestler, and yeah, he's used for dumb, sometimes bordering on racist comedy, but he's a great wrestler. So I want to give him his flowers this week.
Well, yeah, I it was not his idea to put himself in the ninja outfit. Let's put it that way.
I adored that ninja gimmick, though. It was so unrepentantly stupid, and he can pull off unrepentant stupidity. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, but so I'm going to stay with NXT and talk about the Carmelo Trick Williams segment here. This is the first time in terms of characterizing these two guys in a long time that I can think of where they just missed the mark on this. It feels like,
I agree.
It feels like in other times, Trick and Melo are really kind of like left to their own devices to kind of come up with their kind of characters and where they're at with everything. And in this case, they wanted to get a bunch of moving pieces in here. Like, obviously they have Lexus King. Lexus King. All right. Hold on.
Did he grow on you this week? Because he grew on me a little bit this week.
I mean, yes, but no, we have to talk about Lexus King's usage here. There's a thing there for sure, but okay. So you're watching one movie. let's say you're watching one movie with two friends from the hood who have come up over the years, and like they've been close, and like they have challenges and all these struggles going on between.
Yes.
Them.
Yes.
And there's this question that, like, this is where I think they got too cute. They got too cute by half.
It's so obvious Tupac's a bad guy and that Omar Epps is a good guy. Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, they got a little too cute by half here with the Melo Trick.
The melodrama is...
the melodrama. Trick, like, asking in, like, weird, dodgy ways, like, never fully asking. It's almost like a Shakespearean sort of thing.
They shouldn't have done that. They should have just been more direct.
Should have been straight up, right out the bat. And, like, you have Melo either say, no, I didn't do it. And either one, it's a lie, or two, it's truth. But that's almost got to be the end of the segment. Like maybe they have like a little bit of follow up. They said they're going to go for like the tag titles or something. I don't know.
End of the segment has to be Melo realizing that Trick doesn't know. Yeah. And him having a momentary moment of realizing that he could get off the hook and get away with it, but not wanting to show that. And having to hide it real quick. And the problem is they go so big with the expressions and the look on the hug thing where he has that weird look on his face as opposed to just playing it how a guy.
Well, and that one's, I mean, I at least liked that closing shot just because it was like he accidentally waylaid Mello. But then, like, I don't know. Yeah. You don't know who attacked you. Like,
no, it has to be, wait, you didn't know who attacked you? You know, kind of inquisitive, right. Type of a thing.
Right.
You know what it is? It's the equivalent, not saying apples to apples, of the director's note to play drunk. And I saw Michael Caine talking about this once. It's like Michael Caine came in and they told him to play drunk. So he went around, slurring his speech and falling all over the place or whatever. It's like, no, you don't play drunk that way. What does a drunk do? A drunk is not
trying to compose himself and
trying to be sloppy and falling over the place. A drunk is trying to talk well and keep himself composed. That's what a drunk does, type of a thing. And that's what it was for this. I mean, this didn't feel like a guy who lied to one of his boys or whatever, type of a thing. This felt like, how would I script a TV show with somebody lying so that I could tell the audience, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, of course it was him, type of a thing.
So you're watching like that, like 90s, like street sitcom dramedy or that street drama sort of thing, right? And then all of a sudden in comes Alexis King or Lexus King. And like, wow, like looking at once like Brian Bowman and also Michael Hayes, like
the head of the white gang from across town has come in for a cameo.
Yeah, but like from like a completely different movie. It's not even that movie. He's not even on the right set.
He's my cousin from the country who's coming for a guest set.
It's
the character from the other sitcom who happens to be visiting the neighborhood as a crossover on ABC, yes, type of a thing.
Energy, like, I'm the new guy around here. My name's Lexus King.
Bob Saget has entered the Family Matters house for some reason.
But like, he's here to shake it all up, and that's the whole premise of this episode. Like,
he's Poochie.
Yeah, he is. Serious Poochie energy.
Oh my god! Yeah.
And then he comes out, and it's like, now we've taken this scene that was already being overwrought, and like goes into this like weird overdrive where Lexus King's like, well, you never know. I might have attacked you. I might have done it because I'm a new guy and I'm on the scene and I'm trying to make a name for myself. And like, it just...
You know who that character is? That character is the guy in the crime movie who's taking credit for somebody else's crimes and gets shot in the head in the alley. The guy who actually did is like, what are you doing taking my credit away from me and trying to get your props?
Yeah, like, I'm the one who's doing all the things. Maybe it's me. You never know. Whenever anything crazy around here happens, maybe it's Lexus King who's doing it.
Unfortunately, the only reference I can come up real quick with is almost 30-year-old movie. Have you ever seen The Quick and the Dead? Lance Henriksen's character, Ace Hanlon, who says he shot this gang, and then Gene Hackman comes out and goes, oh, you're the one who did that? Let me tell you something, I'm the one who did that. He ends up just blowing him away. Oh, yeah. It's such an over-the-top thing, too. It's like he's quoting Def Leppard on the way down. And then,
like, he gets to the ring. He stands between Mello and Trick. And, like, Trick clearly, like, Mello at the end of this clearly should be mad at Lexus King. Like, Lexus King, like... If he's not, like, in order for even for this to be plausible at the end, like, even if Mel's trying to cover up that he's lying, he should then be that much more angry at Lexus King. Like, man, what the hell is that guy doing down here? He shouldn't have been down here. He had no reason to be down here. I'm going to get him. Like, we're going to find, like OJ, we're going to
find the real killers here. I'm going to go to the melodrama on the other side of the ledger because I have an interesting theory about this. Chris, who do you think the devil is?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I mean, if you had asked me a few years ago, I would have had a different answer.
No, the AEW devil.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Pat Tanaka.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'd be so here for that. I'd be so here for Pat Tanaka. Oh,
Pat God. Tanaka.
One of the guys in the hood is Paul Diamond.
Yeah. He has a new faction.
Al Perez would have also been funny for me because of the whole Black Scorpion thing.
Yeah. It's Adam Cole, maybe?
It's Adam Cole or Britt Baker, I think has to be it. I've seen people say Jungle Boy because of the glass this week. Here's my theory that I came up with that's off the beaten path, that there are actually two devils, and one of them's MJF. And the other one, MJF knows who it is, and he's not sure about whether or not the devil is working with him or not. And he might be going rogue on MJF. And that's why MJF was so concerned about the Acclaim. But then again, that was so, oh, my arm. Someone has hurt my friends, the Acclaimed. Whatever shall I do? Also, I have a weird other theory. I think they've actually been changing the minions to throw us off. Because one of those guys was Wardlow this week. So there might be two sets of people working for the devil, if there are two devils indeed. And one might be the Pinnacle, and one might be the Kingdom and Kyle O'Reilly. Who knows? But it's one of those things where I think...
Oh, I think MJF's a baby. I think that this was just poorly blocked. I think that...
That could be it, too.
Yeah, I think, like, Wardlow and these other guys, that like Joe, I mean, especially like the mask, it could be Joe who is the devil.
No. Well, maybe.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
That was a thin person on that first beatdown that was standing there.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, but this week Wardlow was definitely one of the people under the masks or whatever. He's the guy who threw Bowens through the plate glass window or whatever it was. I just like, what is that cubicle doing there? It's so weird.
And I really don't think Wardlow's in cahoots with MJF.
No, I don't know.
They have to. It would be, it would be the most AEW completely unearned turn ever to
it
put.
It can't be a manager. I know that much, but go ahead. Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Why can't it be a manager?
Because there'd be no, because all the heat would be on that manager then. If one of the minions is a manager, fine, but the devil has to be whoever the alpha in the stable is to me, and not a manager per se. Like there's like, I think it, I mean, look, if you make it creative, I'm cool with that. And I think Cole or Britt is the obvious answer here. There's only one person that if it, who it is, it would be an absolute fart in church for me. And Flair? No, Tony Khan. If Tony Khan is the devil and this whole thing is about the war for 24 or whatever, and to try and ruin MJF's bargaining chip with the company or whatever in storyline type of a thing, that kind of meta crap. No,
that would be the jump the shark moment.
Yes.
Where like Tony Khan makes himself not just the, like he makes himself the Mr. Khan character.
Yes.
Oh,
he's the Mr. McMahon.
Yeah.
Oh. He's Eric Bischoff. He makes the same mistake as every other single promoter of the past 30 years.
Right. Yeah. And it's that one's highly plausible for sure. I've been trying to figure out like who it could be. I mean, I keep going back to, it's got probably be Adam Cole, right? Like Adam Cole's the devil. And
I want it to be Pat Tanaka now. Are you kidding me?
Tanaka. Pat Tanaka's very much out there. I'm sure he's available. Like you can get him.
Oh, thank you, Chris. That popped me so big. You just immediately come out with Pat Tanaka.
Why not? Glacier?
Look, Bad Company needs their flowers. They were a fantastic tag team. Some of you may know them as the Orin Express, the second version. But yes, they were an awesome tag team in the AWA. I loved them so much. Your turn, sir.
Man. Now, the devil thing is, I think, you know, definitely a point of intrigue here. Like, what are we doing? What is the point of this? Outrunners are fine. They don't. They're like. There's such a weird. The problem with Dynamite, right? Like, kind of like on a regular basis, is that there's just like not a ton of heat for any of these matches that they're throwing up there.
No.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, you know, theoretically, Swerve Strickland and Penta would be interesting. I mean, I saw it on Lucha Underground, but like, you know, it's just sort of, you know, it's just sort of there, right?
Yeah, they don't build the heat all that much to lead to the TV thing. It becomes, oh, we announced this match Friday, we're going to do it Wednesday.
Yeah, Samoa Joe and Keith Lee, same thing. Like this, you know, should be like a Haas match that you kind of almost spend the entire show wrapping around to build up to.
Dude, I said that match needed to be nothing but chops or I'd be disappointed. So I liked the match, though. I didn't love it, but I liked it a lot. The Outrunners are fun. But the Outrunners are pure gimmick. They're pure irony. They're pure mid-card, and you need to keep them there, and I get it. You need to give them the entrance a little bit. But I will take, I mean, they got a heat segment. They did the homage to Jake with the finger in the air, you know, when he had him in the DDT position and then put him in a suplex. But they got a hell of a lot more than the Bollywood Boys did, and the Bollywood Boys do great work, especially in Defy as their tag team champions. All they got was a 310 to Yuma, and they were out. And I was just like, if I'm the Bollywood Boys, I am negotiating to say, hell no, you let me do what the Outrunners did, and you switched those teams' position. Type of a thing.
I mean, right? Like the guns are not, the other thing with the guns is they're not supposed to be a hella credible tag team,
aren't they?
They're
now in the Bullet Club, so I mean they're supposed to be kind of
in like the Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox Bullet Club. I mean, like, we've come, you realize like the original Bullet Club is now like the management of their company. Like,
yes,
they're sold that like these are like the kids of the Bullet Club. Like the
by the way, if the Elite are the minions, I would love that too. Hangman, Kenny, and the Bucks are the guys beating up MJ or the Jay White and everybody else, and then they eventually turn on MJF. I'd be here for that too. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? Because they've beaten up. Yeah, there's two different groups. Or like there's the time they beat up Jay White.
Yes.
But we also know that the Bullet Club didn't fake that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because like Jay White wasn't gone very long, and he also got a sneak attack in the next week.
Dude, there are no beatings that last weeks or months anymore. I mean, a pile driver on concrete is a transition spot.
Yeah.
It's strong style. It's fighting spirit. No, it's not. It's called not selling.
But the guns aren't supposed to be hella credible. I mean, they're still like the Ass Boys. Like they haven't really fully advanced.
They haven't toughened them up. They haven't really given them that tough sheen or whatever. They're here for entertainment purposes only, to look shocked when you call them an Ass Boy for the most part.
Right. And this version of the Bullet Club is sort of like ironic too. Like it's not.
Yes.
It's not what the Bullet Club was when it was like Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. And
no, it's a t-shirt. Well, those weren't the two I'd pick if you guys say they were.
Those were the days, Jeff.
Those are the guys you're picking, not AJ Styles.
Let me know. Let's talk about
cleaner.
Bad Luck Fale. Tamatanga. Thank you very much.
Who's the Tokyo Pimp character that was in this?
Oh, that guy. He was great. Loved him, too.
Well, Jeff Jarrett was a member of the Bullet Club.
Jeff Jarrett also got himself into the Bullet Club when that was still cool. It was not cool, and he somehow finagled his way into the Bullet Club. This is a fact.
Scott DeMore. Let's talk about the magic of Scott DeMore.
What I'm talking about is this is a faction that had quality control for a long time. So it had a high standard for membership.
Well, Finn Balor or Prince Devitt, at least. You know.
Yes, those also were in the Bullet Club along with the aforementioned Bad Luck Fale, Tamatanga, Scott DeMore.
Hold on, I need to check out this guy's name because I forgot it. Riff a little bit.
Was it Taguchi? Taguchi?
It's something like that.
He used to have these really slow, methodical matches where he would like go outside the ring, and by methodical I mean boring as shit and lazy. And he would go outside the ring and basically just like weekly.
I just remember the name of his second was like Yellow Barbie Mao or something like that.
the pimp guy. Yeah.
Takahashi. I think it is.
Takahashi.
Where he had the towel. The towel was awesome.
This is once a prestigious organization.
The Bone Soldier. Do you remember the Bone Soldier?
Bone Soldier. Marty Scurll. Who could forget Marty Scurll? Beloved wrestling figure.
No more he ain't.
Fans can be very fickle, Jeff. You just get a few bad stories about yourself in the paper with credible allegations and other things.
Haku was in it, so he's cool.
Haku's cool. I mean you go against Meng. Yeah, exactly. The Tongan Death Grip. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
My point is that the guns, the Ass Boys. Juice Robinson, the former CJ Parker, and the cardboard guy. They're a step down from some of these more prestigious figures. Scott DeMore, Jeff Jarrett, Tamatanga.
Cody Hall.
I mean, you know, I kind of think of this version of the Bullet Club's more like Aces and Eights, you know?
I actually liked Aces and Eights before they made the reveal that Bischoff was the one behind it. I really liked the idea of D'Lo Brown running a motorcycle gang.
Why not?
Your turn.
Save
me.
I don't know that I can do that. Okay. I know that Mark Briscoe got injured this year, and that kind of precluded him from being involved more in like matches and stuff for a part of the year. But boy, did they miss an opportunity this year to tell just a really compelling and interesting and like heartfelt story around Mark Briscoe trying to get the championship, and making him a more central character on AEW's show. Seeing him, I was like, oh yeah, Mark Briscoe, yeah, it's great to see him. And then I was immediately thinking, like, why did they forget about this guy narratively? He should be on a journey. He like it, whether or not he wins the title or doesn't win the title, and especially if you've got this devil thing going on right now, you could have the devil jump Mark Briscoe, and if you know Mark Briscoe's on a journey to win the title and then he gets jumped, that'll now make people want to know who the devil is because they like Mark Briscoe so much and they're like on board with Mark Briscoe's journey and such. It should mean more.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should be a more important character to this show.
And he's always a joy. I mean, his interview segments on, I believe, Rampage and Collision were just so great and so full of energy. And he's so naturally likable, too. And the backstory itself would sell itself if he wasn't likable, but he is. And, like, I really liked this main event on Dynamite too. I really did. I thought it was if you juxtapose it with the Daniel Garcia match against MJF, which was a television match, but you never believed for a moment that Daniel Garcia was, and boy was that, side note here, he cuts a promo saying you're gonna get the wrestler Danny Garcia.
And then there's no change whatsoever.
He's doing a little bit of dancing. The dancing ends up hurting him in the end. And you're just like, no, they didn't tell the story that they said they were going to set out to tell.
And it's stupid, too, because, like, in this case, especially when you have a preliminary title match, like, this is the ultimate opportunity for someone who is a wrestler to be like, I'm going to be the spoiler tonight. And, like, he just goes in and starts waylaying MJF. I mean, this is actually a really good, like, trap game sort of story match where MJF catches an injury because Danny Garcia, like, targets his knee or something like that. And now, like, going into the title match against Jay White, he has a tweaked knee or something like that that can be exploited.
Yeah, no, and Mark is, I mean, they got me once thinking that he might get inserted into the main event in full gear, but alas, it was not to be. Bit of an update as I've been following SmackDown while we tape because we're live. Asuka has turned heel and has joined Damage Control for a bit, so it looks like both War Games are kind of set, or at least it'll be a little bit of a mystery for it. I think I like the Raw War Games a lot, and I think Drew McIntyre will eventually be inserted in here or something like that. But yeah, it's going to be Judgment Day and JD McDonagh versus Cody, main event Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and Seth Rollins. But I think they're gonna have Drew join. He's eventually gonna heel on this babyface team, but I think he might be a replacement for somebody on the babyface team and then turn in during the match or something. I don't know.
And join Judgment Day.
I think so. Or he just goes in there and joins Judgment Day and then they have LA Knight save the day, I thought. But LA Knight had something else different. But then on the SmackDown end, it's going to be the women's War Games. And we know the heel team's probably going to be Bayley, Asuka, Kairi, and Io, which to me is a hell of a team. It's just a shame. It's just a shame that Bayley is the only one who can cut promos for them because they're just going to be basic foreign menace until they turn on Bayley. I think on the babyface side, it's looking to be Bianca and Charlotte as definite. It's probably Shotzi since she's been aligned with
Charlotte.
Now the fourth one's interesting because if they just go with who they have on that roster, it'd probably be Mia Yim. But I think you debut Jade Cargill in the War Games. And I think she's the cleaner for the babyface team. Let me put it this way, guys. I think Jade Cargill's winning the Royal Rumble. I think there's no way she doesn't win the Royal Rumble. And if you want to just debut her in the Royal Rumble, that's fine. But if you want to tease her going into the Royal Rumble, you have her come in here and be the cleaner for one of these teams and go, oh crap, here we go. And then you have her win the Royal Rumble. So I'm of the opinion that she is going to be in this War Games.
In the 6 weeks leading into the Royal Rumble, you can maybe have her have one or two TV matches too, just to get her sea legs.
Not too many. Not too many at all.
Not too many.
Nope.
Wait. I was told for a long time by people who were fans of the previous company that she worked for, that she was developing. Are you saying that you don't think that that happened?
I'm not saying she hasn't developed, because she has improved. I am saying that less is more with stars sometimes, and you have to kind of miss them a bit and to anticipate their return, and then they become a bigger deal. If you have her on TV week after week after week, wrestling, people will start to figure out, well, maybe she has some deficiencies in her wrestling. See what I'm saying, Chris?
Yeah, no, I think you can only really get like about four matches out of her before you start really exposing her. Like you have to kind of cover up in multi-man type of...
We are starting the rehearsal for whatever her Mania match is now.
Oh, I know, yeah.
You have to be.
Have to be. She's...
I'm hoping it's not Charlotte.
She's not a weekly television person. She's not. Like, she can't. She just the dots have never connected, and I don't see that getting better in WWE, honestly.
Yeah, because it's Becky and
scripted stuff.
Yeah, no, it's Becky and Rhea, definitely, I think. On the women's side, though, Jade. Boy, I don't do Jade Bianca. I love Bianca, but I don't know if she's that good of a ring general to be able to carry that.
Ooh,
Charlotte is interesting, kind of, but Charlotte's always in a top spot.
I think you got to do the Charlotte Jade thing, just and have Charlotte call the match, and it is interesting because if Charlotte checks out on the match, that could be really fun.
I mean, Asuka would be an interesting pick here.
I don't want Asuka. Is she going to call the match?
I think so, but I mean, yeah. I think the, you know who I think the safest choice is Bayley. If they could find a way to heat up Bayley, I don't know if they're going to. It looks like they're going to be turning her sooner than later.
Right.
But maybe we do babyface Bayley versus heel Jade, and I'm kind of here for that. I mean, you can't really. I mean, maybe the, well, you know what? We still have a couple weeks until Survivor Series. If the Japanese women on this team, if Damage Control, if Io, Kairi, and Asuka all turn on Bayley, and she's the fourth on the babyface team, you bring in Jade as the heel cleaner. And then you turn it into a Bayley redemption story where she's the only one of the horsewomen who haven't had a main event at Mania. She's going to lose at Mania if she's up against Jade, but you at least play it up for a bit. You have her win the title at some point.
Yeah, you ever have the championship going into Mania? And
yes. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
That'd be an interesting one, yeah, for sure. I think that's maybe the strongest of the options. Jade's, I mean, look, we've always been pretty down on Jade.
You have. I've been higher than you have on her, though.
Dude, I mean, it's one of these things that just seems like a good idea on paper. And then whenever you actually start trying to execute Jade Cargill in concept, you realize that there's just these like glaring gaps.
Glaring. Yeah.
That like the things that she's good at don't compensate for.
And the thing she's good at fit into the WWE style. Don't get me wrong. The problem is she doesn't have, and I hate to sound snotty here, and I don't mean it that way, but she doesn't have the day-to-day grappling / wrestling know-how to get to those spots that make her good type of a thing. Like, she's not like Bayley to me is the best example. Bayley is the best bell-to-bell performer that they have in the women's division because she knows all the notes between the music and she knows the music. She knows scales. She knows she can do her triplets. She can do arpeggios. She could like she in terms of a musician, she knows theory and she knows improvisation and she knows performance. She's the complete total package.
Yeah, she knows how to do a good weekly show / go to a blues jam. She knows how to play like an actual rock club /
yes.
pay-per-view thing.
Yes, Jade knows performance and she can do a solo. But she does the same solo every time.
Right. And like you really, I mean, with Jade, you need to have a bunch of rehearsals and she's only going to go up. Yeah. She is the.
She has her solo written out on the sheet music.
Yeah. Like, or like it's, you know, kind of like the way Ace Frehley used to do it sometimes where like, I mean, and there'd even be more schlocky or guitar players who really did this where like they just basically played the exact same solo every single show. every show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like not every song, but like every time they played, let's say, like, this is not true with Thin Lizzy, but like The Boys Are Back in Town. They played the exact same solo to The Boys Are Back in Town in Wachuga and also in Columbus City and also down in Jacksonville and like all over the set. Like every single place got the exact same note for note solo.
That's a disappointing thing, though, if you listen to bootlegs of different shows on the tour, you realize they've been playing the same solo everywhere.
Yeah, and boy, is that a magic killer. It's real crushing. No, but like Cargill is amazing, or like not amazing, but very serviceable and like can be very easily sort of packaged and presented in a way that's compelling for like a built once every 6 weeks sort of match thing.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is that you don't necessarily want to make someone like that your champion, but Jade Cargill's kind of like too big of an act to not
make your champion.
Not make your champion. But then when you do that, then you now run into the issue of week-to-week television.
I mean, we have done the opposite, because this will make a good bookend. We have done the opposite with Jade that we did with Mariah May. We have brought her onto Raw and SmackDown and NXT and said she is a big deal. We gave her a throne on NXT to sit down as the new queen of professional wrestling, whatever it is. She is a big money deal. She is here to be a star type of a thing. You can't have her go into that first WrestleMania match and lose, per se. You can't have her, if you want to look, if you want to eliminate her in the Rumble and put her in a mid-card match to see what you have there, I don't mind that, but it's going to damage her stardom. You have basically said we are putting the rocket on this woman, and you need to pay it off.
I mean, all things being equal, I'd much rather have Mariah May than Jade Cargill. It's just like, I like to build off of. I mean, even if Mariah May's not knocking my socks off right now, you can help her find a character, and like then she can do everything else on the week-to-week television, and it's going to be just fine.
Yeah, but you're also going to need reboot her eventually from that character. That's the thing.
I'm just saying, like, in a vacuum. I'm not saying Mariah May not on AEW. I'm saying Mariah May, like, if I was doing WWE and I was doing...
Okay, gotcha.
I'd if I have Mariah May, it's like a much easier thing to work with.
Yes.
Cargill's inability to do interesting TV matches is just it makes it really hard to have any sort of long-term plans for. She to me is in a lot of ways like her ceiling really is mid-card faction leader. She leads the faction. She doesn't have many matches. She does like power moves every so often. And, like she seems like she's the heavy and maybe even has like a really devastating single move that she does. But that's it. Like she shouldn't.
She's Batista in Evolution.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's
before the breakout. But I don't think she's going to be able to be that breakout.
That's going to be the breakout. Yeah. Yeah. But like that to me is kind of what she is. Or you're another one of your old favorites, Top Dollar.
By the way, B Fab showing up randomly on SmackDown, watching the screen backstage during a women's match.
Bring back B Fab.
Yes. She wasn't cut with Top Dollar or Ashanti. It was just Top Dollar, I think, that was cut. That grew. Any other point I have is minor, so I think we should just end kind of there. Well, do you have anything else?
I'm trying to think.
I know
it never goes well, right?
No, it's one of those things, because if you do it, then I'm going to bring up my minor points nevertheless. So I mean, I'm here for my JC Jane talk, but other than that,
the Creed's had a match on Raw, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they had a match. I'm liking the Creed's kind of. Yeah. Oh, they had the match against DIY. That's right. Yes. That's right. Yeah. I was like cleaning my house and I had this like, and I had Raw on, and like Raw's always one that I can kind of like coast through a little bit. But like they had some decent little tag matches on here, and then when I saw all of a sudden, I was like, oh wait, the Creed's are having a match against DIY. mean, it wasn't like the DIY versus Creed's match that you would want or whatever.
No, it's not. It's not the NXT Black and Gold Takeover match.
Yeah, right. But like, it was still, it was like, huh? Oh yeah, the Creeds are a team that I would like to see a lot. There are a lot of different people I'd like to see them have matches against.
Yeah, this might be a shock to you. I mean, let's stick on Raw in WWE for a bit. The Sami Zayn Seth Rollins match was absolutely sublime. It was fantastic. I loved it, and I liked the build at the beginning for it, and then to do it at the end, that was great. Sami Zayn's a very good worker. Seth Rollins is a very good worker. They had good match.
Seth Rollins is also doing interesting stuff as a character now inside of this weirdo Seth character. Like, this Seth character is almost like sort of like an emotional drunken master, like where it's like, yeah, but there's like an actual, like an underlying sub thread, like in all the laughing and cackling and swaying and like goofy suits and stuff are like,
there's a sadness to him.
Oh yeah, no, he is. No. He's like, no, are you familiar with the sad cloud who goes to the doctor? Turns out that he is
Pagliacci.
Yeah, he is Pagliacci. Yeah.
Yes. We're just all over the place with the references today, aren't we? And while I really did enjoy Seth and Sammy, I am equally just got no F's to give. Well, maybe one F to Gunther and the Miz for that title. The one F I have to give is that the Miz is all of a sudden just pulling out weird moves that he never did before as a baby face. Like aerial moves and stuff. And you're like, that's the Miz. What are you doing?
And I want him to go the other way in this match. I want him to try to cheat like mercilessly against Gunther. Like the way he's going to win the title is by like multiple low blows, like to the point where like Michael Cole's counting, like that's the sixth low blow in this match.
Like the meme of that martial arts guy getting just kicked in the nuts over and over and over again. Yeah. Just boom, boom, boom.
He ref bumps the ref, and like Imperium's like trying to revive the ref, and like Miz just immediately goes and kicks him in the balls. And
he's
like
just escalating the nut.
Yeah.
He like nut shot.
The yes, yes, yes. It like does like a nut shot like from across the ring.
It's a ref bump, and he kicks him in the nuts. He punches him in the nuts. He grabs a chair. He hits him in the nuts. He breaks a table over his nuts. Barbed wire baseball bat to the nuts, all of it.
Exploding ring on the nuts.
It's the only move he does, as a matter of fact, in this match. It's just nut shots the entire time.
He does that. He attempts to deliver the skull-crushing finale, instead delivers it to his nuts.
To his nuts, yes.
Nuts, yeah. It takes him by the waist, slams his nuts into the canvas. And then gets a 2.9.
It's a transition move. Gunther explains that he used to be part of the Blackpool Combat Club, and he turned his testicles just slightly so that the nut shots didn't affect him.
You turn them to the right.
Turn them to the right and cough, and then you don't get hit by them. Oh, let's cut this show. We're not going to top that. You can follow me at CrapGame13. Follow Chris, that's on X. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. You can follow Chris on the gram at Dr. Nov. That's DOCTOR_Nov. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Podcasts for all your niche wrestling needs. Music of the Mat, 5-Star Match Game, Good, Bad, The Hungy, Open the Voice Gate, and of course the flagship with Rich and Joe. You like what I do, and God knows why would you after that horrible joke. I'm on the Fight Game Media Network. I do a show called The Dynamite Show. It goes on about 20 minutes after Dynamite ends. It's a thorough deconstruction with myself and Paul Ace Fontaine, where I basically focus test the bad takes I put on here about AEW. It's patreon.com/fightgamemedia. $5, you get the audio and watch the video for free. But hey, I'd like to get paid occasionally. Chris also likes to get paid occasionally, and here's his monetary plug for you.
Yeah, if you're interested in music lessons, please hit me up on Instagram. The holidays are coming up, and it's a great time for you to buy guitar lessons for somebody you like, or to buy a guitar for somebody who you know doesn't like guitar, and then give them lessons for a thing that they hate. So long as you square up with me before the lesson, we're all good.
That's or if somebody's parents really hate guitar, you buy that person a guitar and give them lessons.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. You're going through a divorce, ex hates guitar. great idea for the holidays here. Get your kid a guitar, tell him that you love him a lot, and you know, we'll get started. Anyways, if you're interested in doing that, you can hit me up on Instagram. I also am posting demos of my band, or like, I mean, I guess of me doing songs that my band will be performing here, so that we can start getting gigs, so that then we can start performing. So if you want to hear the songs, and then you theoretically like the songs, so that there's not like videos, that would be good. Otherwise, you know, everyone have a Merry Christmas.
It's November, fool.
Oh, okay. Somebody doesn't believe in the Christmas spirit.
That's it.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.